My name is Pontius Pilate. I am a citizen of the Roman Empire, and I served as governor of Judea, which is on the eastern shore of the Mediterranean Sea. I governed there for 10 years, a long time in a foreign land. But in all those years, I was never able to figure out its peoples. Most of the people of Judea are Jewish. Their overriding concern in life is their God and their religion. And any practical consideration is always put to their religious laws. I remember once I tried to assist these people. I wanted to build an aqueduct to bring water into Jerusalem, which gets its water from a few springs within the city and frequently runs short. I proposed building an aqueduct to carry water into the city. I told them to pay for it using the funds they had stored up in their temple treasury. It made sense to me, instead of letting the money sit in the temple to honor some god. Why not use it to improve the city? But the Jews didn't see it that way. They were horrified that I'd even consider using temple funds. The protest was so great that I had to call out the Roman legions to maintain order. On numerous occasions, I had to call out the troops to quell the people who were upset about some religious squabble. Those incidents earned me the reputation for brutality. Because of that, I was finally called back here to Rome. One thing still haunts me, though, from Judea. An incident I've tried to forget. It has to do with an execution I ordered of a man named Jesus. It was during the Jewish Passover celebration when all the peoples from outlying areas come to Jerusalem to feast and to worship their God. With so many people around, religious squabbles usually come up. It was on a Friday, and I was at the Praetorium, my official residence and place of governance. I'd no sooner started my day's tasks when I was informed that the Jewish leaders had arrested some religious fanatic. It didn't surprise me. They often arrested dissidents. But then I found out that a special meeting of the Sanhedrin, their governing body, had been held in the middle of the night. And they had already tried and convicted the man. Now, the Sanhedrin did most of the day-to-day governing of Jerusalem and handled most of their own problems. However, I had the final say in all matters, and only I could order an execution. Thus, when the Sanhedrin decided to execute someone, they had to come to me to get the order. I couldn't believe they were serious about executing someone for a religious dispute, but that seemed even severe to me. I didn't want to be bothered. I had too much to be concerned about rather than their disputes. But the priests and the leaders were incensed, so I agreed to hear the charges. They brought to me Jesus, a man from the hill country of Galilee. He looked terrible, tired, beaten down, and I wondered, what had they done to him during the night? But in his eyes, I could see authority. I've been a governor of provinces throughout the Roman Empire, and I know authority, and this man had it. I was told this man was a wandering preacher with a growing band of followers. He was accused of proclaiming he was king of the Jews. Kind of a silly accusation. So I asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He replied, "You have said so." I should have known better to get a straight answer from a religious troublemaker. The priests and the elders, though, they were growing agitated and began reading off a list of charges: blasphemy, wrecking the temple, disobedience to Rome. I asked Jesus about these charges, but He didn't say a word. The charges seemed to be trumped up, but he wouldn't answer. He kept his calm, but his presence made me uneasy. When he finally did speak, he said his kingdom was not of this world. He said he had come into the world to bear witness to the truth. And this piqued my interest. So I asked him, "What is truth?" But again, he was silent. It was all very strange. He could have been a madman from what he said, but I didn't think so. There's too much of a presence about him. I suspected the charges had been made up by the priests and the leaders out of envy. They had probably lost some of their followers to this Jesus, and so they were determined to stop him. Certainly, to me, not a reason for wanting to put a man to death. I was trying to decide how to handle the problem without inciting disorder in the busy city when I had a burst of inspiration. I remembered that at Passover, it was the custom in Judea to set free one of the prisoners of the land. It's an ancient custom. I don't even know where it comes from, but one I could use to my advantage. I told the gathered authorities that, as was the custom, I would release for them one prisoner. They could choose either Jesus or a man named Barabbas, an insurrectionist, a renegade who was convicted of murder and robbery. I knew they'd take Jesus. Nobody with any sense would want Barabbas back on the streets. But then they cried out, "Barabbas, set Barabbas free." I couldn't believe it. They wanted him instead of Jesus. So then I asked them, "What should I do with Jesus?" And they shouted, "Crucify." I ordered Barabbas released and wondered what this guy had done to warrant being crucified, to warrant such hatred. And it became obvious to me that the matter was far more serious than I originally thought. Jesus would have to be punished somehow, if only to satisfy the priests and the elders, so I ordered him to be whipped. My soldiers led him out and flogged him thoroughly. A while later, my soldiers brought Jesus back, bloodied and weak. They placed a crown of thorns on his head, put a purple robe on him, mocked him, "Hail, King of the Jews." And I led Jesus out to the authorities to see that he had been punished. That, I thought, should satisfy the Sanhedrin and put the matter to rest. But no. When the chief priests and elders saw him, they began again to call for crucifixion. I couldn't believe it. They were as adamant as ever. I had Jesus led back to my chambers so I could decide what to do with him. And as I returned to my chambers, a servant delivered a note to me from my wife. The note said, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much over him today in a dream." My wife had never met this man. My stomach started to churn. I decided I had to get to the bottom of this. Once inside, I pummeled him with questions. "Who are you? Where are you from? What are you after?" But again, he didn't say anything. He just looked at me intently, yet beyond me. I had the terrible feeling there was more going on here than I could see. I mean, this Jesus, a religious teacher from out of the hills, a second-rate citizen from a third-rate area, he was nothing to me. Yet I was afraid. Something far greater was involved here, and I didn't like it. I began questioning him again, but he still gave no answer. Finally, in anger, I told him, "Don't you know that I have power to release you and power to crucify you?" He looked at me, very straightforwardly replied, "You would have no power over me unless it had been given to you from above." Somehow I knew it was true. I had power of life and death over this man, yet I felt like someone else was in control. It was like we were characters in some supernatural drama, going through roles that had been prearranged on a scale larger than I could ever dream. That was it. I couldn't crucify this man. A large crowd assembled outside, so I dragged Jesus to the balcony to announce, "I'm going to let him go." But the crowd exploded. "Crucify him!" I asked, "Why? What has he done?" But they yelled all the more. The leader shouted that if I were a friend of Caesar's, I would crucify Jesus because Jesus had declared himself king in place of Caesar. "Crucify him! Crucify him!" they shouted again and again. So I had a wash basin brought out to me, and I washed my hands before them, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourself." They were crazed. They yelled back, "His blood be on us and on our children." There was no way out. I could see a riot developing, so I gave the order to crucify him. The soldiers led him off for execution, and the crowd began to break up. I retreated to my chambers, and I just sat there. I had the strangest feeling that what had happened had to happen, that Jesus had to die. I ordered a sign placed on his cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews." Even if he wasn't their king, the sign would at least insult the priests and the elders. That evening, the official report noted that during the ninth hour, Jesus died. All of that was a few years ago now. I've since been called again to Rome. I've tried to leave Judea behind, and I've tried to forget Jesus. Sometimes it feels all like a terrible dream. My wife still worries over what happened. I've learned now there's a new religion in the empire called the Way, and the followers are followers of this Jesus that I executed. My wife wants to find out more about them, but she's afraid. I've tried to put it all out of my mind, the trial, the crowd. I keep telling myself it's just another fanatic, another strange person in a land of strange people. But sometimes at night, I awake and remember and wonder, who was he? Was he a king? Did I have any power over him? I remember asking him, "What is truth?" Perhaps truth is deeply tied to this Jesus of Nazareth.